Hi, everybody, and welcome to That's Life, the show where after yesterday's flight, I really have seen everything. Good afternoon, folks, and thanks for listening. I am Miriam L. Wallach, blogger, writer, and slightly congested general manager here at the Nachum Segal Network. You can find me here every Thursday at 2 p.m. as I hope to bring you a little entertainment, a little news, and a little relief that the life you are leading is not nearly as wacky as mine, nor that you were sitting next to me on the plane last night. Coming to you from the beautiful home of the Nachum Segal Network on the stunning Lower East Side. It is a glorious weather day. Hello, Avram.
How's it going?
Thank God. It's really, except for the fact that I'm a little bit coldy. I can't figure out why. Everything, thank God, is going great. What about you?
I'm good. Thank God. You were on a flight?
Yeah. This is part of my crazy. If you stand by 1 second, I'll tell you how crazy follows me everywhere. It followed me to Miami a game. If you are a new listener to the show, thank you for taking a break from your day to tune in. And if you are a returning listener, thanks as always for making us part of your day. If Miriam L. Wallach once a week is just not enough for you, do what my dad does. Happy birthday, Dad. Friend me on Facebook or send me an invite on LinkedIn. You can also shoot me an email, miriam@nachumsegal.com. I will not respond to you during the show, but I will, please God, make sure to get back to you afterwards. And as I keep promoting, please follow us on Twitter, nachumsegalnet, all one word. So my dad is turning 75 tomorrow.
Mazel tov. B'li'ayin yes. Hara ad me'ev yes
Rosh Hashanah. Amen.
Health,
amen,
wealth,
amen.
And happiness.
You got it. Amen. He should live and be well. So I decided that instead of buying him, another pair of cufflinks or something else, I mean, it's a big birthday, that I would fly to Miami, where he is a snowbird, and surprise him for the day.
Oh, so nice.
And take him to a baseball game. So
who won?
The Mets did, actually. It was nice. It was Mets-Marlins. The game was really actually a good game. It was a lot of hitting. It was a good slugfest. They won 7-6. It was a terrible error in the eighth. It looked like the Mets were going to lose and whatever else. But it was actually a really good game. David Wright played really well. It was exciting. But anyway, we went to the Marlins game. But this is the crazy part, is that the ticket that I had found to fly back and forth was really, really cheap, which was, sorry, Dad, one of the reasons I decided I could do this trip. And the flight on the way down was not as surprising, shocking, or anything else. It was a pretty straightforward flight. It was on the way home that things got a little bit interesting, because I was sitting on an aisle seat, and a woman was coming as I set myself down in my seat, and a woman was boarding the plane. She was coming down the aisle, and she was struggling. She was holding a bag. She was holding a this, a holding a that, and she had a walker, like a cane with her. And I said, can I help you? I got up. I helped her, and she handed me a bag, and she said, there's an animal in this bag. I'm like, okay, you know, I've flown with pets before, but she didn't say my pet is in here, or she said, there's an animal in this bag. I'm like, okay, fine. So anyway, she sits down on the other side of the aisle from me, and this is a really small plane, so maybe there's 18 inches separating me, the animal, and the woman. Now, again, I have flown with animals on planes before, but she took the animal out and put it on her lap, and then wore a tag that says, comfort animal.
What is it? What was it?
It was a dog. And that's okay. I
in
like
a
dogs.
Bag?
No. That's the point. The dog was out of the carrier, was sitting on her lap, and she evidently had some kind of special pass that said comfort animal, which allowed her to have the animal on her lap the entire flight. Now, that's not the craziest part of this. I sit down, and I'm totally sleep deprived because I didn't sleep the night before, and I'm running on adrenaline, and I can't stop crying from laughter. And I don't know if this woman realizes that I'm laughing at her. It's not like I was watching a video or something that I was laughing at a movie. I was just laughing at her. I couldn't stop. The two people sitting next to me, by the way, the plane was packed. The two people next to me spoke no English whatsoever. The only thing I realize is that they're talking back and forth to each other, and they're clearly looking at the dog. And I hear the husband say to the wife, zapatos, which either means socks or shoes in Spanish. And I looked at them and I said, sí. So that was like an entire conversation I had. And then the husband says to the wife, something, 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 frío, which I guess meant, is this woman afraid the dog's going to be cold? Why? Because the dog was wearing shoes. The dog, that's what I'm saying. The dog had shoes, a matching outfit, a diaper, and wait, here's the best part. The dog's outfit matched the woman. They had the same trim, the same pattern, the whole nine yards. I did not take a picture. And she came on the plane with a hat. Ki'ilu, she was going to the Kentucky Derby. It was, I mean, the hat was chumongous. I was like, and I'm crying from laughter because I'm laughing at this woman, and I'm exhausted, but I am momish laughing at this woman. So I look at this, the husband says to the wife, Frio, about the fact that this dog is wearing shoes or socks, and I said, no, loca. That's the end of my Spanish. I just used all of it, because this woman is clearly nuts. And I text somebody, I said, is comfort animal PC for something? And she's like, yeah, crazy. What the heck does that mean? Anyway, so this entire flight is completely packed. It gets better. The entire flight is completely packed except for two seats, the ones in the rest of the aisle with this woman. Now, even though everyone is packed like sardines, no one wants that inside window seat because that means they have to sit with the woman and the dog in the hat. And they don't have matching outfits. So all of a sudden, in like 20 minutes into the flight, she realizes no one's sitting next to her. She lies down across the entire seat. She goes to sleep, and the dog lays on top of her like a sphinx, staring at me for the next hour and a half. Seriously, the dog and I mean, the dog doesn't blink. Do dogs have eyelids? They're not frogs. Thank you. They are completely, therapy animals. Thank you. Now we have information now on therapy animals, comfort animals. You can travel with the therapy animal and a comfort animal. Comfort animals are used. This is information. Thank you, Duke. He just got it from pettravel.com. Who knew? Who knew? Comfort animals are used in animal-assisted therapy to improve the physical, social, emotional, and cognitive conditions of the patient. There's Adkan. There's got to be an Adkan moment. You know what I'm saying? That we say until this point, it's enough already. Anyway, this dog is staring at me for about an hour and a half. I'm like playing, staring games, like who can blink first with the dog. I'm losing every single time. And all of a sudden, I said, I'm like, that's it. I close my eyes. I put my earbuds in. I stop making eye contact with the dog. Then what happens? The dog goes to sleep on the woman. And the hat, the huge hat, is on top of the dog, on top of its head, like it needed like blinders because the light on the plane at 9 o'clock at night was too bright. I'm telling you, I didn't know what was going on. This was like the craziest thing. Anyway, you would think that was the end of my flight. It wasn't, because then we had an unruly passenger once we landed. Now, this guy was clearly, clearly inebriated. But, yeah, okay, be inebriated, but don't be the unruly passenger on the plane. While we are still actively taxiing, I think we barely just hit the tarmac, this guy is up on his cell phone walking down the aisle. And the flight attendants are not even up yet, and the flight attendant is yelling at him, sir, you need to sit down. He is ignoring everyone, and all he keeps on saying is, I can't breathe, I can't breathe, I need to get off this plane, I can't breathe. And so finally, what happens? They usher him into the seat next to the woman. They move the woman over, she sits in the middle seat, and now I'm sitting next to the guy and the woman with the dog. I'm like, I gotta get off this plane. Anyway, that was, we finally land. We finally get to the gate. This is a crazy long story. We finally get to the gate. I know. Sorry, everyone. We get to the gate. The guy literally, like, pushes his way to the front. He gets off the plane. We're all, like, stumbling after him or whatever. And as we're walking towards baggage claim, he's screaming into the phone, what do you mean you went to Newark? I told you LaGuardia. I'm like, you know what? It's time for me to go home. Anyway, that was it. That was my crazy flight from Miami. Isn't that worth it?
Sounds like a really good time.
Anyway, that is a crazy story, but I thought it was worth sharing. Let's get to some business, because we do have some national holidays today that we would not want people to miss. Heaven forbid. It's Mollusk Day. Yeah, it's Mollusk Day. It's also, it's Martin Z. Mollusk Day, which Yael Asen explains to me. It's like Groundhog Day, but for Ocean City, New Jersey. If the hermit crab Martin sees his shadow, there will be an early summer. I have no idea. It's National Day of Prayer. I think every day should be a National Day of Prayer. It's National Day of Reason, that I can help you with. And it's Robert's Rule of Order Day. Robert's Rule of Order. You know what that is?
Yeah, yeah. I was in student government when I was in college. I think they used that kind of stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, cool. All right, so then that's shayach to you, basically. Let's do the fortune cookie, because we do have three interviews today, and I got to get moving on that. This is our last fortune cookie until after Shavuos. Oh, that's nice. You will be rewarded for your kindness to others.
Kindness is its own reward.
That's nice. I enjoyed going down to see my dad as much as I think my dad enjoyed seeing me. That is for sure. We had a great day, and it was a surprise, so that was fun.
Do you Skype with him?
I don't Skype with him. I don't Skype with anybody.
I did with my parents this week. I've done it a couple times, and like, it's good. They get to see you. Skype is, or one of those kind of things.
Yeah.
It's a good thing. People get to
FaceTime.
See you whenever.
FaceTime. Yeah. No. I FaceTime more than I Skype, but FaceTime is fun. Anyway, you are listening to That's Life live from the home office of the Nachum Segal Network on the beautiful Lower East Side, and I am ready to be joined by my first guest. Ruchi Shoretz, founder and CEO. Is that the executive title?
It's executive director, but titles aren't important.
Founder
is fine.
Okay, that's great.
Charlotte Lady works too on occasion.
Really?
Yeah, you know, whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes to get the mission going and get the
exactly.
work out there.
Exactly.
Ruchi Shoretz, I'm sure Sharon joins us this afternoon. Hello, Ruchi, how are you?
Thank God I'm well.
Good. I know you were on with Nachum earlier in the week, but with Sharon's event coming up on this Sunday and a bunch of other things going on that I was unaware of that are going on across the country, and of course the New York Times article that I'm sure everyone's been bombarding you about, there's just so much to talk about that I'm happy you joined this network twice this week.
Oh, thank you. No, it's been a busy year in breast cancer activism, that's for certain.
I imagine. I just want to talk about a couple of the events before we get into the nitty-gritty of a lot of other things. Starting a couple of days ago through tomorrow, the University of Houston has a rockathon. Am I getting this right?
You know, we have so many campus events across the country. You probably are right. Did you find it on our website?
I did find it on your website. It said the Brothers of the Alpha Epsilon Pi Fraternity,
Yeah, we have an amazing relationship with AE Phi and AE Pi. They're the Jewish fraternity and Jewish sorority on campuses across the country. And students on those campuses who are parts of those fraternities and sororities raise critical awareness for Sharsheret every year. And so we've got campus programs running on more than 70 college campuses across the country at any given time. It's really amazing and a wonderful partnership. We're very blessed.
And it's funny, though, because when I saw the name of the event, the rockathon, I'm like, all right, something having to do with music, rock and roll. No. Brothers from the fraternity will take turns rocking in a rocking chair for 65 consecutive hours, starting on April 30th and ending on May 3rd.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing, right?
Yeah.
The amount of time that students have to dedicate to important causes.
Yeah,
the funny thing is, and really I think the important thing is, how creative they are with their awareness raising efforts. You know, it doesn't take money and it doesn't take, a lot of resources. Sometimes it just takes a rocking chair.
Exactly. And you know what? It's funny because I'm sure that somebody's listening to this going, you know, this is why students are not doing well in college because and I would say completely the opposite. Like, I would love to know very seriously that my kids either didn't show up in class because they were involved in a fundraiser like this, because at the end of the day, this is what makes leaders, and this is what makes activists, and this is what makes people, you know, for lack of a better word, shyach or involved in their community, and that's crucial.
I'll take it one step further. I mean, I think that that's right, that we all want our children and students on campus involved. But at Sharsheret, we sort of took a step back a year or so ago and asked ourselves the question, you know, we're raising so much awareness, but are students really walking away and understanding how breast cancer and ovarian cancer and hereditary disease in the Jewish community generally affects them personally? Meaning, is the student in the rocking chair ending his rockathon, understanding that cancer is going to impact him as a Jewish man? Or is he thinking that he's raising funds and raising awareness for someone like me who's been personally affected? And what we recognized was that students were involved in all of these activities, and it is a wonderful aspect of college life, involvement, and like you said, shaychus to the Jewish community. That's all important. But at the end of the day, we really wanted them to carry away a message of relevance, that breast cancer and ovarian cancer are issues that affect them as young men and women. And so we launched a campaign on campus called Have the Talk, and it was with funding with a family that really felt strongly that we needed to educate the next generation. And Have the Talk encourages these same students to take their activism one step further, go back to their families and ask them, do we have cancer in our family? Mm. Has there been breast cancer? Has there been ovarian cancer? Is there any chance that we may be carrying a genetic predisposition to hereditary cancer? And take that information with them as they transition from young adults to full adulthood. And our hope is that we'll move beyond the rock-a-thon, which is great and kitschy and fun for raising awareness, to real knowledge and understanding of the medical issues that affect us as a Jewish community.
Is it still, though, it's still important for all of these events to go on, but now understanding your angle and not doubting that it's the validity of it, it's that it can't happen in a vacuum. It's not just about raising the money, even though the money is necessary. It's
correct.
It's about the education that goes along with it. And I think that actually probably speaks to, you know, the New York Times Magazine article, our Feel Good War on Breast Cancer.
Yeah.
And one of the angle and one of the parts of it being that you turn around and there are pink ribbons all over the place. And while I appreciated Peggy Orenstein, who wrote the article, I appreciated her angle and her perspective, there's something still very refreshing to me by the fact that there are pink ribbons all over the place.
So, you know, I think the pink ribbon war, quote unquote, cuts both ways. I mean, on the one hand, anybody who's been affected by breast cancer, Peggy herself included,
Right. Recognizes
that the pink ribbon and breast cancer awareness campaigns have raised significant dollars for breast cancer research. And I know that there are people who are struggling with cancers that receive far less attention and therefore far less funding. And so, you know, I feel like we've been riding on the coattails of this pink ribbon campaign, and now there's sort of a backlash. You know, people are tired of buying, you know, pink mixers and pink washing machines and wearing pink shoelaces without the substance. And perhaps the solution to the backlash and sort of moving the needle a little bit sort of halfway is to add substance, as we've been trying to do at Sharsheret, to the campaigns. It's not just about talking about breast cancer. It's about helping women and families and communities understand how these cancers affect them personally. And I think if we spent more dollars and spent more time really tying substance to the campaigns, we wouldn't see the backlash that we're seeing now.
Have you seen a dip in people who have either been asking questions to Sharsheret or contacting Sharsheret about going for mammogram screenings as a result?
No, I think all of the backlash has only enhanced the number of calls we've had to Sharsheret. So, you know, Peggy's article speaks a lot about we've been increasing the number of diagnoses of early stage cancers like DCIS, ductal carcinoma in situ, cancers that perhaps would not have progressed to later stages.
Right.
And she questions whether or not all of the screening emphasis that we've placed in the pink wars has made a real difference in curing breast cancer and saving lives. At Sharsheret, whether or not you believe that mammograms should start at 40 or 50 or not, it's irrelevant. The calls keep coming, and they come even more frequently because we are catching cancers early and because we have articles like the one that appeared in the New York Times last week. So I would say just the opposite, not a dip, but rather a spike.
I have to tell you, that sends me a lot of relief. Because I read this article and other articles, you know, it's a very important article. I'm not saying no, but there have been other articles before, and there's been a lot of talk in the news over the last 18 months about the importance of screening, the age, et cetera, whether or not early detection for certain kinds of cancers, as it mentions in the article, really does make all that much of a difference if in terms of treatment and yada, yada, yada. I'm not a diagnostician, nor am I at all fluent enough in the material in order to carry on a conversation from that end. But I'm just reading all this material going, please God, let there not be five people who say, you know what, I don't need to go for a screening.
Right. And I think from the Jewish perspective, and that's our expertise at Sharsheret, from the Jewish perspective, when you have a community that has such a strong predisposition to certain hereditary cancers, you know, 1 in 40 Ashkenazi Jewish men and women carry a breast cancer gene mutation, and that mutation can enhance the likelihood that one will develop breast cancer or ovarian cancer in her lifetime. So some of our families are at very high risk. Peggy's article doesn't really deal with high-risk families like the kinds we find in the Jewish community. And so while I, you know, appreciate the attention, I like to turn the focus to the Jewish community. If you are a family that is at enhanced risk, the notion of screening is critical. You know, many of us are not in the general pool of typical at-risk women in terms of breast cancer, some of us may very well be in the high-risk category. So, you know, calling Sharsheret, getting an understanding of where you are on the risk spectrum is critical in order to make a determination about whether or not mammograms, ultrasounds are relevant for you and at what age. And people ask us here all the time, you know, they read these articles, they get confused, they call and say, you know, I'm not even sure now. Should I be getting a mammogram? When should I be getting a mammogram? There's no magic answer to this question. It is an individualized analysis based on one's family history and one's own body. Dense breasts, age of diagnosis for, you know, someone in your family, predisposition in terms of a genetic mutation. All of these are factors that go into an individualized analysis of whether or not someone should be screened and how. So rather than just sort of read a magazine or even, you know, hear me talk at a speaking engagement or hear our conversation on the radio, the most important thing is to take your family history to a doctor who has expertise and some experience in risk analysis and talk about, you know, this is my family, this is our history, this is my own medical history, what should I be doing on an annual basis? Do self-exams matter to me? What age should I consider mammography? What are the risks? What are the benefits? It's an individualized conversation. And so, you know, even the images that you see in articles like the one in the New York Times show thousands of women standing and rallying for breast cancer. And it gives the sense that we are all one, and we are in the sense of the fight against breast cancer. But at the end of the day, the risk is an individual analysis. And every single person needs to separate themselves from the crowd and from the mass media and figure out with their doctors what their own risk is.
And I, by the way, not to interrupt, but I think also that's part of the education as well. In terms of Sharsheret's messaging, if I can add that in, it's that you read articles like this, realize that we are a unique population, and that's where Sharsheret comes in. That's where Sharsheret, you know, not that it doesn't shine in other areas, but that's where Sharsheret is unique, is that it addresses the fact that Ashkenazim and that the Jewish population, the Orthodox population, has this unique quality, so to speak, and that while articles like this are important, it's important to realize that we are not like everyone else. There is something different.
Right. I mean, it's not an Orthodox-only issue. We have Jews from across the spectrum of Judaism who phone into Sharsheret, and even those who are not necessarily Jewish but who are also at increased risk because of BRCA mutations in their family. So anyone with a high risk, with a high-risk family history, is encouraged to really take a step back and think about their own unique family makeup and bring that conversation to the attention of a healthcare practitioner.
Rochelle Shoretz is founder of Sharsheret. She joins us this afternoon here on That. That's Life. The event coming up this weekend, this Sunday. By the way, just another one going on this Sunday. NYU is having a manicure for Sharsheret. It says on the website, join the Hillel Shalhevet for their annual manicure for Sharsheret event to raise awareness about breast cancer in the campus community. And you can book your appointment with them today, which, again, I think is adorable, but it speaks back to the Rockathon.
Right. So they're raising critical awareness, but you can be sure they're also armed with educational materials. You know, they're contacted and in contact with Ellen Kleinhaus of our staff, whose responsibility it is to ensure that they are both armed with manicure materials, but also at the same time educational materials, because that's the critical end. At the end of the day, yeah, of course, I want your nails to look beautiful, but I really want you to understand how breast cancer affects you as a Jewish woman.
And Sunday, the annual benefit is this Sunday at 10:30 in the morning at the Teaneck Marriott in Glen Point, Teaneck, New Jersey. We are recognizing the incredible contributions of guests of honor Dr. Tammy Brick and the Lisa Altman Volunteer Tribute Award recipient Dr. Gila Leiter. Can you talk to me about these two wonderful women for a moment?
Oh, you know, a moment? No. But I can give you they're incredible. What do they have in common? I was thinking last night. They have in common the fact that they're both accomplished doctors. They're both incredibly dedicated to women's issues. They're both triathletes. They joined Team Sharsheret to do the New York City Triathlon and raise awareness for Sharsheret. And most important, they've been involved with breast cancer and raising awareness for Sharsheret since the organization's inception. Gila was one of the first founding board members members of our community advisory board. Tammy, herself a breast cancer survivor, has been a peer supporter for four women all across the country. And the two of them just bring incredible energy and inspire all the rest of us, really, in the work that they do for Sharsharet.
What's the program like that morning? I think it's a little bit unique to other, you know, people think about going to dinners, et cetera, but this is a luncheon.
Right. I mean, it's not just the food that's different, although I know a lot of people want to know what's on the menu. You know, it's a very uplifting and brief program where we highlight the work that Sharsharet has done in the past 13 years since we were founded, and really recognize two extraordinary women. There's a silent auction. It's upbeat. It's really an opportunity for the women of Sharsharet from all over the country to connect with each other and their families and their loved ones. We'll have more than 500 there this year,
wow.
And it's absolutely beautiful. So I encourage people to stop by. I know, you know, I'm not the kind of person who's inclined to just drop in at an event that I haven't really been a part of, but this is the kind of event that is really welcoming and warm, and I would encourage anyone who's interested in learning more about Sharsharet to stop by.
Not to be naive and not to sound silly, but how do you have a breast cancer event or an event for an organization that raises awareness about breast cancer and keeping it upbeat the entire time?
Yeah, you know, we've gotten some feedback about that. You know, on the one hand, we do want it to be an upbeat celebration of Sharsharet, not of the disease, obviously, but of Sharsharet, because, you know, obviously, we want nothing more than to close up shop. You know, I would love for Sharsharet to really not fill a need anymore. That would be wonderful. On the other hand, we also want to identify that breast cancer is a difficult journey, and so we sort of have to walk a fine line between telling real stories of difficulty, of challenge, perhaps of triumph if for the individuals who are facing breast cancer and ovarian cancer, but at the same time also reflecting that what Sharsharet is giving back to the community is a cause for celebration. So it's difficult for many. It's emotional. The stories that we hear are heart-wrenching. They are. But they are also inspirational and motivational. And our goal is to show the women and men of our community, because men are welcome to attend as well, that there are so many ways to get involved. You don't need to be a breast cancer survivor or an ovarian cancer survivor. It could be a call that speaks to you for any number of reasons. And there are so many ways to put your talents and your energies towards Sharsharet.
You've said that before, by the way, that, you know, you're ready to, it would be nice if you didn't have a job, so to speak.
I always say that.
I think
that all the time. Please,
it's great.
Put me out of business.
I think it's a great line. I really
True.
Do. But I also noticed recently that Sharsharet has a number of positions that are opened. Am I right?
Yeah, we're growing. We're opening an office in South Florida. It's our first regional office.
Wow.
And we're very excited to serve a population that has really been calling for greater education and outreach programming. So we'll be starting off there within the next few months, actually.
Wow.
And here within Sharsharet, our survivorship program is growing. And so there are positions available, which is wonderful. The resumes come in and in and in. And there are amazing qualified candidates out there who are really, you know, wanting a position here. They see, you know, an opportunity for growth and the wonderful work that we do. And we're very blessed.
So I think that if people are not only interested in attending this Sunday, and people should, if you are able to make it to the event this Sunday, you really should get to the Glen Point Marriott in Teaneck, New Jersey, and be a part of the Sharsharet event. But also, if you realize that your commitment to Sharsharet lies beyond coming to the event, you should contact them, because there are positions available and you can be part of a phenomenal team that, ironically enough, wants to put itself out of business.
I like the way you put that.
Yeah,
join us. We don't want to be here.
Right.
Come join us.
I think, listen.
Help us end breast cancer.
It's only a takeoff of everything you've already said. Ruchi Shoretz, thank you so much for joining me. Continued hatzlacha and continued good health. And I look forward to hearing wonderful things from Sunday.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Take care.
Take care.
You're listening to That's Life here on the Nachum Segal Network. I am Miriam L. Wallach, and we are joined by our next guest. Adira Hulkauer joins us this afternoon here at That's Life. She is playing two roles this afternoon. She is not only a bake sale coordinator for a bake sale going on at the JCC in Manhattan on Mother's Day, where 100% of the proceeds go to Gift of Life, and running a donor drive there as well. We will talk about that. But she is also a volunteer at a local gamach up on the Upper West Side. So, Adira, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the bake sale first.
I would love to.
Great. So the bake sale benefits Gift of Life 100%.
Yes.
How are we doing that?
Okay, so essentially this idea kind of came to be when a friend of mine and I were speaking about, well, we both love to bake. I'll start there.
Okay, good.
And I had mentioned to her that it would be nice to sort of sell something and have the proceeds of that go to Gift of Life. And this is because Ayelet Galina, who passed away now a little bit over a year ago, was the daughter of good friends of ours and also, you know, as you know, inspired.
Right.
Right, way beyond our community. And so I had mentioned that, thought this would probably be a good place for the money to go because donors, we need more donors.
Mm-hmm.
I should say we need more people to be sampled as potential donors.
Right.
And so, you know, it was this conversation between Elisa and I, and then suddenly it was, well, why should we just kind of sell something? Let's do something bigger. Let's do something bigger. Where would be the right place to go to have this event? Well, to sort of house this event.
Okay.
And we spoke with the JCC in Manhattan, and they've been unbelievable.
That's right.
And it was sort of the perfect location because it's a community center. And
right.
For us, I think one of the things that was the, you know, kind of a common trope with Ayelet is like how much she inspired community and built community from, I mean, people of all ages, people of all religious affiliations, and not just within the Jewish community, outside of the Jewish community. Also, there were a lot of people that were touched by her story and followed her story.
Right.
And I think became more aware of the need for more bone marrow donors through her story. So to be able to do this at a community center that welcomes all people, I think, was sort of an unbelievable opportunity for us. And it's going to be a bake sale that's actually comprised of baked goods that were made at the JCC, or will be made. Don't worry, they haven't been made yet. And
yeah, no one wants an announcement on the air that everything's frozen.
It's
right?
All done. It's all taken care of. Made by actually volunteers at the JCC, from kids through teens through seniors.
Nice.
And so that will be one part of our bake sale. Another part will be home bakers. And again, sort of this theme of community comes up because there are people that are baking who are extraordinarily close with Seth and Hindi and knew Ayelet personally and sort of lived through the entire story and are baking. And then there are people that are baking who said, I heard about this and Ayelet was such an important
nice.
Person and I want to bake. It would be my zikus to bake for her and to bake in her memory. And so it's our contributors kind of, you know, span
right.
the spectrum the same way the people who had been interested in Ayelet's story and the donors that came forward over that time, you know, sort of span the spectrum. So
Hindi was actually on with Randy Wartelski a couple of weeks ago on something to talk about. What was that, 2 weeks ago, Avram? Thank you. Just so that people can reference it if they're interested. And her parents, Ayelet's parents, chronicled it was one of the reasons that her story is so well known is because her parents blogged about their plight and their daughter's plight. And her cancer, and again, you and I are not doctors, and we're in no way, shape, or form in a position to talk about this from a medical point of view, or are we, you know, women with children who have ever suffered through any kind of disease of this sort. But there was something about the way they used social networking to spread her story, to gain a following. So that people would, to raise awareness of the importance of donors and of bone marrow donors and how to get swabs and how to be part of the Gift of Life, that really caught the attention of people around the world, from celebrities from celebrities to laymen to everything. Oh, it was April 18th. Thank you. The April 18th show of Something to Talk About if people want to go back in the archive and listen to Randy's show. So when I heard that you were having this bake sale in memory of Ayelet and in order to sponsor and help Gift of Life, it was ki'ilu. It was almost like, you know, not only is her story not over, but the efforts of her parents are continuing.
Yeah. And I think one of the most amazing things is if you go to Gift of Life, by the way, is a bone marrow registry.
Right.
And a lot of the proceeds that go, a lot of the money that's used is used to test these swabs. So sort of to recruit people to be donors and also to then test and facilitate matching with people who are in need.
And people don't realize how many swabs have already been done that can't be tested because there's no money. And
right.
that is a huge problem. That's why Gift of Life is not just about the drive. Like, even if you even beyond getting swabbed, which is an enormously important step. And people who can be there on May 12th at the JCC in Manhattan on Amsterdam and 76th from 11 to 3 should go, should buy baked goods, and should get swabbed. But they should also know that they need to give. That's the reality. It's how much is it? Do you know how much it costs to I forgot. I used to know it also.
I thought it was like in, I wanted to say somewhere in the 50s or 60s.
Yeah, how much it costs to process a test,
per
right?
kit, but I could be wrong, and we can go to giftoflife.org to
check
that out.
Right, I was about to say, anyone wants to go to giftoflife.org can find that out. But if you are able to get swabbed and you're able to pay for your own swabbing kit to get tested, that is huge.
Yes, so please buy $50 or $60 worth of baked goods when you come to the bake sale. And I'll also say, I think I was sort of picking up on how IELTS continues to give and continues to give, is that all these individuals that came out and got tested to see if they would be possible matches for IELTS are becoming matches for other people.
Right.
And if you go to her page, I think it's her circle, I can't remember exactly the words, on the Gift of Life website, you can see that there have been over 64 matches and over 12 transplants. So
wow. Unbelievable.
12 lives.
Right.
Lives.
Saved.
Lives.
Because of the efforts of her parents, because of the, spearheading this process of getting people out there, getting them to get swabbed, be members of that that circle, so to speak, and to get your DNA into Gift of Life, because there are people out there who are constantly needing it, even if they don't have the resources to have somebody make a bake sale or have parents to blog about it or whatever it is, who know how to use social networking to the extent that her parents did. Like, it's just genius. But there are people now who are suffering, who are waiting for matches.
Yeah, and I so first I wanted to go back and just say, by the way, that I was talking about the different categories of baked goods that would be there, and I really didn't want to forget to say that because we wanted to be completely inclusive for people, and if people were concerned in terms of kashrut about buying from home bakers, that we are also have had an amazing response from donors from different bakeries, not
Fantastic.
Just in the city, but also outside of New York City. So Pomegranate in Brooklyn,
Great.
Bagel Basket in the city, Butterflake in Teaneck,
mm-hmm.
Gourmet Glot in Sudorhurst,
yes,
I think.
Yes.
I don't remember.
They do also have a location in Borough Park that I guess you contacted today.
Zomix, and a bakery now that's kind of a newer bakery on the Upper West Side on 123rd Street. I guess it's not completely Upper West Side, called Say It With Cake. And Simply Divine Caterers, who caters for the JCC and other places.
Fantastic.
Seasons in Manhattan. We have a private donor, Ellen Nussbaum, who has been giving us, who's going to get us lots of baked goods also.
Great.
So it's been, I mean, it's just, I guess, amazing to sort of ask and have people say with pleasure.
Oh,
and
isn't that great? Where's my fortune from today?
It is great.
Rummy, my fortune from today, you will be rewarded. Adira, I'm going to read this to you. You will be rewarded for your kindness to others. That was my fortune today.
You will be rewarded for your kindness? Okay.
For your kindness to others.
That is a good fortune.
That
and
is.
It's actually
you
kind of
it
a fortune.
You should play these numbers. Yeah, okay, go on.
No. Just wanted to say one thing as we were talking about the importance of donors. So, like, just in terms of understanding why you are important is that it is very much linked to our genetic makeup, who we match with.
Mm.
And so if you're an Ashkenazic Jew, it used to be back when people began getting tested for J. Feinberg years and years and years ago,
right,
that there was a 5% of matching. Now, a 5% chance of matching. Now there's a 70% chance of matching. And that is because people show up to drives and
wow.
people get swabbed. And back then it was giving blood, but now it's just opening up your mouth and
right.
getting a cheek swab. And so, it's important to know that those numbers couldn't have grown like that without advocacy, but
mm-hmm.
also without just each individual person showing up and remembering that it only takes one person to save one life in the end.
Right.
Another thing is sort of this myth that it's incredibly painful. And now it's no longer harvested from your pelvic bone, except for some rare occasions, like I think maybe 20%. 80% of the time, it's the same kind of procedure as like giving platelets or blood.
Right.
And Nick Hudson, who is from Special Projects at Gift of Life, who's been working with us, just told me that he was with a donor who was playing on his iPhone the entire time.
Are you serious?
Now, I know people play on their phones under really terrible conditions also, but it seems like this was kind of, as minimal as that. Like,
right.
let me go sit in a chair, play on my phone, and then save somebody's life.
Wow.
That sounds like a good plan to me. I don't know
right.
about to you. And, the third thing is that we need a lot more people to come out between the ages of 18 and 25. almost, I think, 79% of the donors that wound up being chosen for matches are in that age range.
Really?
As younger people, you produce more stem cells. I think that that's part of it. I don't want to, you know, again, not a doctor.
Right.
But to know that that percentage is so high. So if you are between the ages of 18 and 25, if you know someone between the ages of 18 and 25, please encourage them to get to come to our bake sale and buy lots of baked goods.
Unfortunately, but, right now, all I'm thinking is how far I am away from that age category. But yeah, I hear what, yeah, I know it's terrible.
Yeah.
But it's obviously a very valid point. I would hope that the information for this bake sale and for this donor drive is getting out to every Hillel and every one of the and every university with an Ashkenazi population to make sure that kids at YU, and I guess guys at YU, calling them kids really does make me 100, but guys, students at YU, students at Stern, and at NYU, at Baruch, I mean, there are Ashkenazi Jewish kids all over the place. We need to make sure to spread this information, because if that's our target age, this is the best way to get it. And I mean, there are often drives in Israel for the 18-year-olds while they're in yeshiva abroad to make sure that we are getting that population as well. So if there's anyone who's come back, if you have a child, you have a sibling, or you have a family member who came back from Israel who didn't after Pesach for their year and didn't return back to Israel and they're local, this is the best thing they can do on Mother's Day after giving their mother a hug. They can go and get themselves swabbed.
And you can buy things for your mother.
Right, and buy food for your mother. That is important. By the way,
Shavuot, by the way.
And
which
Shavuot.
Is 2 days later, and we're going to have some awesome dairy and parv things coming from some really great bakers.
We should make sure, by the way, to impress upon people the importance of buying. Like, as a person who has run bake sales before, they can be stressful. And I'm not saying that to be funny, but it's not just about supplying the baked goods. It's also making sure that word gets out that we really need people to buy. You're not pocketing this. I'm not pocketing this. It's going to Gift of Life.
Every penny, by the way.
Every single penny. And thanks to the JCC also for making that happen. Now, let's talk about the gamach for a second.
I would love to.
I saw pictures of this gamach, and I could not believe it. It is a clothing gamach, and it's located on the Upper West Side, and it looks... It's more than it just looks like a store. It looks like an upscaled Upper East Side kind of a store. You wouldn't say that?
I mean, I think it looks like a store. We have racks. Everything's organized by size. To me, it's an incredibly inspiring space on, you know, just, I guess, on a practical level, but also sort of on a spiritual level to sort of see what, you know, we were sort of speaking about community, but what community coming together does. And what they can produce.
Right.
And so the gamach, my understanding is that there used to be a gamach in the empty apartment on the Upper West Side, and it was difficult to have appointments, and it was, you know, a little bit complicated to, technically complicated to run. And when I sort of joined as a volunteer with the gamach, it had come to the stage where there was a woman, Shira Goldman, Sherry Fatzel, and this woman, Eliane Glassman who works at the Jewish Center, and they had come to the Jewish Center and said, can we have some space? And the Jewish Center said, you know, the Vakasha, and gave an entire floor,
wow,
basically, of the Jewish Center, well, a huge portion of a floor, it is actually, I think, the floor of the Jewish Center, to this gamach. And we have had some drives, but I have to tell you, it's like the most unbelievable thing. Every single day, we get an email that says, where can I drop off? What can I do?
Mm,
and in addition to that, every time that I walk into the Jewish Center, the wonderful staff that works at the door says to me, there's bags, there's bags, there's bags. And it's actually, you know, like, I think it's, you know, we always say, like, it's a bracha when you have too much of something good.
Right.
So we have a wonderful amount of clothing, and we're only accepting new and slightly gently used clothing. And because of that, we're able to provide people with clothing, and that really speaks to sort of the dignity, sort of a dignity issue. I'm not really saying that exactly so well, but, you know, it's not come and find something somebody threw away. It's like,
right,
come and find something that I would be proud wearing and you would be proud wearing.
Right.
And that's something I'm very specifically excited about and proud of, is that what we have to offer is the best. It's just as good as anything you would get at a store.
Nice.
And the way that it works is it's by appointment only.
Okay.
And everything is confidential. So we have a website, an email address, which is UWS, so Upper West Side, UWS Gemach, GEMACH, at jewishcenter.org. And you can email us and just ask for an appointment time. None of the information gets transmitted. It's all kept confidential, and the times are scheduled so that there's no overlap, so that we can, you know, I think that there's an interest in privacy and confidentiality right. that people have, and we want to honor that.
And I just want to make sure that people have the phone number. It's 212-724-2700, extension 110. There are shopping dates coming up. It looks like that we have one a day, one a night, so to speak, depending on the date, the May 8th, the 19th, June 4th, and June 23rd, all by appointment only. You should make sure to email them, UWS, Upper West Side Gemach, G-E-M-A-C-H, at jewishcenter.org, 212-724-2700, extension 110. They are located at 131 West 86th Street. And I don't want to forget to give out the information again for the bake sale, Sunday, May 12th. That's Mother's Day, folks, 11 to 3 at the JCC in Manhattan, Amsterdam, and 76th. Get swabbed, buy cookies. That's a good...
That is fair.
That is fantastic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I just wanted to also mention that when the Gemach was getting started, we had a donation by Alan Leitner, who was Leitner's Linens, who gave us a lot of the storage.
Oh, wow.
Which is very important. And actually, it's the one, you know, one thing people keep asking is, what more do you need? And one of the things we really do need is storage materials, like bins
and racks.
Clothing racks. Like, right. if you have clothing racks from a clothing store and you want to get rid of them because they're a little bit bent or little, please, please give them to us. But also the other thing is, please talk about us, because we have clothing for people, right. and we want to give it away, and we're able to give it away, and we're filling our appointments, but thank God our supply has exceeded our demand right now, and we just would love people to start talking about it. Email us, tell us who you know in your community that spreads the word about things like this.
Do you guys have a Facebook page?
We have a page on the Jewish Center.
Okay, website.
Website, and I think we'll come up with a Facebook page. That's a good idea. I think we've spoken about that. And we can also, you know, hopefully at some point we can also post needs.
That would be
something that we can do as well.
I imagine also with camp around the corner, parents who need to send trunks off to camp or just have clothing for their kids for the summer, et cetera, like, this is a great resource.
Yeah, and we have.
Is confidential.
We have clothing for children and a lot of T-shirts and things like that.
Excellent.
And, you know, the other thing is that people in need, I mean, they all look the same. They look like us, you know.
Right.
And it spans all different socioeconomic levels. And I think that our communities are filled with people who need this. So we're very excited to be able to be present and provide a service.
That's great. Okay, so again, folks, the bake sale, benefiting gift of life, and includes a donor drive, is Sunday, May 12th at the JCC in Manhattan, 11 to 3, Amsterdam Avenue and 76th Street. That is Sunday, May 12th. Please make sure if you can get there, get there. And if you can't, you should also go to giftoflife.org. You can get a test kit from them, and you can – I know, Avrami, I know. You can get a test kit from them. And make sure to get swabbed. Either way, Adira Hulkauer, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You're listening to That's Life here on the Nachum Segal Network. I am Miriam L. Wallach, joined by our third and final guest for today. Uri Dopelt, or I think I pronounced his name incorrectly again, is the manager of Safra Vasefa, which is a phenomenal organization that takes Sifrei Torah, that were being used by Tzahal, by the IDF, that have become pusul, or that have become improper for use, and koshers them and corrects them in order to send them back out with our soldiers. Hello, Uri.
Hi.
How are you today?
Baruch Hashem.
Excellent. So explain to me the inspiration, or what started the organization in the first place, because the story that goes along with the organization of Lieutenant Colonel Emmanuel Yehuda Moreno is phenomenal and very well known.
Yes, he's very unknown. This guy, you can find a lot of material of the guy, but you can never find his picture, because what he done during his life, during his service in the IDF. And the project is on his name, as the family and in the army thought what we can do to remember his name. And because he was in the beginning, he was a yeshiva bucher, he was a religious guy, 35 years old, three kids, married, three kids, and he always was like a sefer, you know, like a sefer person. I was learning, was reading all the time, was writing, and in the other side of his life, he was a soldier, a fighter, and he was connecting them, both of them together. And we know today, we realize things that we never, he never talk about them. The family didn't know about nothing he'd done. And we know that he made unbelievable things that unfortunately only now when, you know, like 6 or 7 years after he got killed in the Second Lebanon War during the mission, we realize what he really done, or we start to get details. We not get all the details. And one of the things that the army not allowed until today, no one is allowed to public his picture.
Really?
So he was really a special guy. And as I said, the family and the IDF, they saw how we can memory his name or to do something, you know, that will show his personality. And the idea was, because of the IDF have a lot, hundreds of Torah scrolls that are damaged during the years, or they got them already pasul. So, and they're just sitting in storage. And the IDF need like 200 Torah scrolls that will be ready for a emergency time, for war, for whatever. So, and they don't have it today. Everything that they have is in service, they use it every day. We're still talking about hundreds of Torah scrolls, but in the meantime, they need another 200 that will sit, but kasher.
So
it's ready for use in emergency time.
So if people do not know, no Israeli units goes out in service without a Sefer Torah with them.
Yes. This is the what make the IDF so special.
Right.
We're not going just to fight with, you know, with guns and all the things. We have the Torah school. We have the Sefer Torah. Every unit that, if we're talking about Miloim, for example, because the regular units have Sefer Torah, but let's take the Miloim, for example.
Right, Miloim are reservists.
Yes.
Right.
And when the army called them to duty, so they come in, they get weapons, uniform, all the things that they need for fight. But every unit needs to sign it on the Sefer Torah. It's going to walk, going to be with the unit. So you're talking about, just for example, for the last operation in Gaza, the army called like 70,000 soldiers.
Wow.
From home, from work. They came to fight. And just imagine, every unit needs a Sefer Torah and they don't have it.
Right.
Right now, I know, because I'm working every day in the army, and we're fixing the Torah school over there. And they came, they took whatever they have. They had like something like 30 ready. It's not enough for 70,000.
Right. There are, to repair a Sefer Torah, people should know, to repair a Sefer Torah, which is exactly what your organization, Safra Vasefa, does, is it costs $10,000 per Sefer Torah. So while some people are have the ability to write a Sefer Torah, and they do it for different different smachot or different events or whatever, there is the opportunity also, and writing a Sefer Torah is a very, very, very costly endeavor. But in this situation, for $10,000, which is still a large amount of money, but for $10,000, if you are able to spend that kind of money, not only can you repair a Sefer Torah, but you can empower, you can send it out with our chayalim, so that when they go out to protect us, they have a kosher Sefer Torah with them.
Yes, correct. So we give the people, I try to call it that we're giving the people the opportunity to dedicate a Torah school, Sefer Torah in this price, in $10,000. If you know how much it costs to rewrite the new one, it's a lot of money,
right.
And not all the people can do it. So what we suggest, we give the people the opportunity to dedicate a Sefer Torah in $10,000 with a big event, all the Achnasat Sefer Torah in one of the bases, with the Chayalim, with music. It's very nice. It's very emotionally, and we had like, I heard it from we raised until now like 40 Torah scrolls, and the people that did it, and the and came to the army and came to Israel, came to the base and made all the dedication with the Chayalim, they were out after, like, days after, because they couldn't get it. It was so emotionally for them.
Right.
And it was a lot of meaning for them. So we gave them also one the opportunity with the money accept one side and the emotionally side, and together it's nice and it's very good and helpful for everyone.
Well, if you are able to and you are interested in saving a Sefer Torah to be rededicated and given to our Chayalim, please check out the website Safra Vaseifa. It's SAFRAVESEIFA.org. I'll read it again. SAFRAVESEIFA.org. And contact Uri, because there are so many Sifrei Torah presently that are out of service that we cannot properly send our Chayalim out without a kosher Sefer Torah to send with them. So Uri, I thank you very much. I'm sorry we got to cut this short, but I am running out of time. But continued Hatzlacha, and I hope that very soon we can be at a Hachnasat Sefer Torah together.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure. You are listening to That's Life here on the Nachum Segal Network. I'm Miriam Elwalk. I'm going to do a quick run through because the lineup is tight and I'm out of time. Guess who is guest hosting for Randy in the next hour? You bet it's Avrami. Avrami Finkelstein is guest hosting. Is something to talk about this week with Randy out. Then we have an all-new presentation of Teen Spirit, again with Leo Razamek, 5 p.m., Ellie Hagler, 6 p.m., Michael Fragan with Spin Class. Yep, that switch is still going on. Followed by Thursday Night Extravaganza, hosted by Nachum. Stunt Show, hosted by Fertig. Don't miss it, 8 p.m., Book of Life with Charlie Harari. Guest, Tamir Goodman. Remember him? He is still a basketball legend. Hear what he is up to. Join Nachum tomorrow morning from 6 to 9 as he hosts JM and the AM and gets his Malcolm Honlein update. You don't want to miss that. Followed by Table for Two with Naomi Nachman. She has a phenomenal show this week. As far as I know, there was a lot of wine and a lot of cheese involved. Don't miss Saturday Night Segal, hosted by Avrami. You can check out our programming on our website, NachumSegal.com. This show will be rebroadcast Sunday at 1 p.m. Nachum and I will Amir Tashem be in Israel next week. Make sure to tune in for our various unbelievable shows that we have coming live from Israel. And in addition, we have a guest host for That's Life next week. Shim Kramer is coming back to the network and joining us as a guest host on That's Life. Please make sure to tune in next Thursday at 2 p.m. Listen to Shim, because if nothing else, he's got the best accent on the planet. And don't tell Naomi I said that. As you can imagine, I am in Israel mode. So we will close with MBD's Yerushalayim is Not for Sale. I'm really looking forward to our show from Beit Orot on Yom Yerushalayim next Wednesday. And who can say it better than MBD? That's Life, everybody. Bye, guys.
Massive construction atop our Jerusalem mountains. A campus luring innocent souls to drink from the forbidden fountains. Like many before, they've come here for war. We're warning them now, it won't pay. Jerusalem, holiness crying, defiling her dearest location. Politics, blinding sense of pride. Are we not the chosen nation? Together as one, we will overcome, bringing her freedom today. Yerushalayim is not for sale, voices crying, thundering throughout our cities. You better run for your life back to Utah overnight before the mountaintop opens wide to swallow you inside. Yerushalayim, your foes will fail, senseless trying, he's guarding his holy city. He's punished all its intruders so awfully, they have perished, the names are history. We'll be right back.
back to the roots more than ever. The leftists fiercely fighting truth, dampening the spark still burning. So wake up, my friend, this is the very end. The arrows are pointing our way. Yerushalayim is not for sale, voices crying, thundering throughout our cities. You better run for your life back to Utah overnight before the mountaintop opens wide to swallow you aside. Yerushalayim, your foes will fail, senseless trying. He's guarding his holy city. He's punished all its intruders so awfully. They have perished, their names are history. Voices crying, thundering throughout our cities. You better run for your life back to Utah overnight before that mountaintop opens wide to swallow you inside. Yerushalayim is not for sale. Voices crying, thundering throughout our cities. You better run for your life back to Utah overnight before that mountaintop opens wide to swallow you inside. Yerushalayim.